This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Metro 2035, written by Dmitry Khluchovsky, translated by Andrew Bromfield, performed by Rupert Degas. Brighter Past, Darker Future. Chapter 1. Moscow here.
It's not allowed, Artyom.
Open it. Open up, I tell you.
The station master told us. He said not to let anyone out.
Do you take me for some kind of idiot? Anyone? Who's that? Who is this anyone?
I have my orders. For the protection of the station. Against the radiation, I have my orders. Got that?
Sukhoi gave you the order? My stepfather gave you the order? Come on, open up.
I'll get it in the neck on account of you, Artyom.
Then I'll do it myself, if you can't.
Hello? Sansage? Yes, to the sentry post. Artyom's here. You're Artyom. But what am I supposed to do with him? All right, we're waiting.
Snitched, have you? Good for you, Nikitska. You snitched. Now push off. I'll open up anyway. I'm going out anyway.
But another two men darted out of the watchroom, squeezed in between Artyom and the door, and started pityingly pushing him away gently. Artyom, tired in advance, with dark rings under his eyes, he still hadn't recovered from his sortie to the surface the previous day, couldn't resist the sentries, even though no one had any intention of fighting with him. Curious onlookers started sidling up, grimy little boys with hair as transparent as glass, pasty-faced women with hands blue and steely from constantly washing laundry in icy cold water, weary farmers from the right-hand tunnel ready to gape mindlessly at anything. They whispered to each other. They were looking at Artyom, but somehow it seemed as if they weren't. And just what kind of expression was that on their faces?
He keeps going out there all the time. What's the point of going?
Uh-huh. And every time the door gets flung wide open and stuff gets siphoned in from up there, you know, damned madman.
Listen, you can't talk like that about him. After all, he saved us, all of us. Your children over there.
He saved people, uh-huh. And now what? Is this what he saved them for, then? If he picks up a massive dose of radiation, all of us here get one, too. The more the merrier.
What the fuck does he go for? That's the question. It's not as if there's anything there. What for?
Then a new face appeared among all the others. The most important face of all. A neglected moustache, hair already thinning and completely grey, stretched out like a bridge across a bald patch. But the face was drawn exclusively in straight lines, nothing rounded off, and everything else in it was tough and rubbery, too tough to chew on, as if the man had been taken and vulcanized alive. His voice had been vulcanized too.
Everybody disperse. Did you hear me?
There's Sukhoi. Sukhoi's come. Let him collect his boy.
Uncle Sasha.
You again, Artyom. We already talked about this.
Open the door, Uncle Sasha.
Disperse. It's you I'm talking to. There's nothing to gawp at here. And you, come with me.
Instead of that, Artyom sat down on the floor, on the cold, polished granite, and leaned back against the wall.
That's enough,
Sukhoi mimed soundlessly, speaking with just his lips.
People are whispering as it is.
I need to. I have to.
There's nothing there. Nothing. Nothing there to look for.
But I told you, Uncle Sasha.
Nikita! Don't stand there gaping. Get on with it. Escort the citizens away.
Right, Sansage. All right, then. Who needs a personal invitation? Move it! Move it!
Nikitska bantered, sweeping the crowd away.
What you told me was nonsense. Listen.
Sukhoi released the air that was inflating him, went limp, crumpled up and sank down beside Artyom.
You're butchering yourself. Do you think that suit protects you from the radiation? It's like a sieve. A cotton frock would be more use.
So what?
The stalkers don't go up there as much as you do. Have you tried adding up your dose? Well, do you want to live or croak?
I'm certain I heard it.
And I'm certain it's just a hallucination you had. There's no one there to send any signals, no one, Artyom. How often do I have to tell you? There's no one left. Nothing apart from Moscow. Apart from us here.
I don't believe it.
Do you think I could care less what you believe and what you don't? But I do care if your hair falls out. I do care if you start pissing blood. Do you want your dick to dry up and drop off?
Artyom shrugged. He said nothing for a moment, weighing things up. Sukhoi waited.
I heard it. That time on the tower, on Ullman's radio set.
But apart from you, no one else has ever heard it. In all this time, no matter how hard they listened, empty airwaves. So what then?
So I'm going up there, that's what. That's all.
Artyom got to his feet and straightened up his back.
I want grandchildren,
Sukhoi said from the floor.
So that they can live here? Down in the vaults?
In the metro,
Sukhoi corrected him.
In the metro, Artyom agreed.
And they'll be just fine living here. At least they'll get born. But this way...
Tell them to open up, Uncle Sasha.
Sukhoi looked at the floor, at the black, gleaming granite. Apparently there was something there.
Have you heard what people are saying? That you cracked up, back there on the tower?
Artyom screwed his face into a smile. He took a deep breath.
If you want grandchildren, you know what you should have done, Uncle Sasha. You should have had children of your own. You could have ordered them around, and your grandchildren would have looked like you, not like fuck knows who.
Sukhoi squeezed his eyes shut. A second ticked by.
Nikita, open the door for him. He can bugger off, let him croak, who gives a shit.
Nikitska obeyed without speaking. Artyom nodded in satisfaction. I'll be back soon, he told Sukhoi from inside the airlock. Sukhoi slid upright along the wall, turned his stooped back towards Artyom, and shuffled away, polishing the granite. The door of the airlock closed and locked with a crash. On the ceiling, a bright white electric bulb, guaranteed for 25 years, lit up and was reflected like a weak winter sun in the dirty tiles that covered everything in the airlock except one metal wall. There was a ragged plastic chair for taking a breather or lacing up your boots, a chemical protection suit drooping from a hook, a drain set in the floor with a rubber hose sticking up out of it for decontamination. There was also an army knapsack standing in the corner, and a blue phone hanging on the wall, like one from an old telephone booth. Artyom climbed into the suit. It was too roomy now, as if it wasn't his. He took a gas mask out of its bag. He stretched the rubber strap, forced it on over his head, and blinked, getting used to looking through the hazy little round windows. He took hold of the telephone receiver.
Ready.
There was a harsh, grating sound, and the metal wall, not a wall, but a hermetic door, started creeping upwards. There was a breath of damp, chilly air from outside. Artyom shuddered. He heaved the knapsack on. It was as heavy as if he'd sat a man on his shoulders. The battered and slippery steps of the endless escalator led upwards. The exhibition metro station was 60 meters underground, exactly deep enough not to be shaken by the detonations of aerial bombs. Of course, if a nuclear warhead had struck Moscow, there would have been a crater filled with glass here now. But the warheads had all been intercepted by missiles high above the city. Only fragments of them had rained down onto the earth, still radioactive, but they couldn't explode. So Moscow was still standing almost intact. It even resembled its former self, in the way that a mummy resembles a living king. Arms in place, legs in place, smile. But the other cities didn't have interceptor rocket defenses. Artyom grunted as he settled the knapsack more comfortably, stealthily crossed himself, stuck his thumbs under the loose straps to pull them taut, and started walking up. The rain drummed hollowly on the metal of Artyom's helmet, as if hammering on his head. His waders sank into the mud, rust streamed down in torrents from somewhere above him to somewhere below him. The sky was heaped up with clouds stifling his breath, and the buildings on all sides stood empty, gnawed down by time. There wasn't a single soul in this city. It had been like that for 20 years. Not a single soul. Looking along an alley formed by damp, naked tree trunks, he could see the immense arch of the entrance to the Exhibition of Economic Achievements. A fine cabinet of curiosities that was the embryos of hopes for future greatness transplanted into fake classical temples. Greatness had been due to arrive soon, tomorrow in fact. Only that tomorrow had never arrived. A godforsaken death trap, the Exhibition. A couple of years ago all sorts of vile creatures had lived here, but now even they were gone. It had been promised that any time soon the background radiation level would drop and it would be possible to make a gradual return to the surface. Look, there were mutants swarming all over the place up there, and they were alive too, even if they were mangled, mutilated brutes. The opposite had happened. Having shed its crust of ice, the earth began breathing and steaming, and the background radiation level skyrocketed. The mutants clung on to life for a while with their massive claws, but those who didn't make a run for it died, while humans held on here underground, living in the metro stations, without the slightest intention of dying. Humans didn't need that much. Humans could teach any rat a thing or two. The Geiger counter clicked away, counting up Artyom's radiation dose. Maybe I shouldn't bring it any more, Artyom thought. It only pisses me off. What difference does it make how much it ticks up? Until I get the job done, it can crackle away as much as it likes.
Let them talk, Jen. Let them think I flipped. They weren't there then, on the tower. They never stick their noses out of that metro of theirs. How do they know, eh? Flipped. I'd blitz them all to... I explained, didn't I? At the precise moment when Ullman had just reeled out the antenna, when he was finding the wavelength. There was something, I heard it, and I didn't imagine it. Fuck it! They don't believe me!
An expressway junction reared up over his head. The ribbons of asphalt had buckled and frozen, shaking off the cars and trucks which had landed randomly, some on all 4 feet, some on their backs, and given up the ghost where they lay. Artyom glanced around quickly and set off up the rough, protruding tongue of the ramp onto the elevated road. He didn't have far to go, a kilometer and a half, maybe. The tricolor high-rise apartment buildings jutted up beside the next ramp. They used to be painted in festive white, blue, and red, but time had repainted everything grey in its own style.
But why don't they believe me? They just don't believe me, that's all. All right, so no one has heard any call signs. But where are they listening for those call signs? Under the ground. No one's going to go up on the surface just for that. Isn't that right? But you just think about it. Is it really possible that no one survived apart from us in the entire world? No one? Eh, that's plain bullshit. Well, isn't it?
He didn't want to look at the Ostankino Tower. But there was no way he could avoid seeing it, even if he turned his face away from it. It still loomed up at the edge of his vision, like a scratch on the lens of his gas mask. Black and raw, snapped off at the knob of the observation platform, thrusting up from underground like an arm with a clenched fist, as if someone huge had been trying to clamber up onto the surface, but had gotten bogged down in the red Moscow clay, trapped in the vice-like grip of the earth, caught and crushed.
When I was up on the tower that time,
Artyom jerked his head stiffly in that direction.
When they were listening, trying to pick up Miller's call sign. Through all that crackling. I'm prepared to swear on anything you like. It was there. There was something there.
Two colossal figures soared up over the naked forest. The worker and the kolkhoz woman, grappling in their strange pose, either skating across ice or spinning around in a tango but not looking at each other, like asexual beings. But then where are they looking? Can they see beyond the horizon from that height? Artyom wondered. On his left, the big wheel of the Exhibition of Economic Achievements was still standing, as huge as a cogwheel of the mechanism for turning the earth. It was 20 years since the wheel, along with the entire mechanism, had stopped dead, and now it was quietly rusting away. The spring had run down. The figure 850 was written on the wheel. That had been Moscow's age in years when the wheel was erected. It occurred vaguely to Artyom that correcting the figure was pointless. If there's no one to count time, then it stops. The dour, ugly skyscrapers that had once looked white, blue, and red expanded to fill half the world. Very close. The tallest buildings in the area, if he discounted the broken tower. The very thing. Artyom threw his head back and fixed his gaze on the summit. His knees immediately started aching.
"Maybe today,"
Artyom asked without a question mark, not forgetting that the sky's ears were plugged with clouds of cotton wool. No one up there heard him, of course. An entrance hall. Just an ordinary hallway. The entry phone is an abandoned orphan. The metal door has no electric power. There's a dead dog in the doorkeeper's glass aquarium. The letterboxes clatter tinnily in the draft, with no letters or junk mail in them. Someone collected everything and burned it long ago, to warm their hands up a bit at least. At the bottom of the wall are three gleaming German lifts, standing wide open with their stainless steel innards glittering, as if he could just get into any one of them right now and ride straight up to the top of this tower block. Artyom hated them for that. And beside them, the door of the fire escape stairs. Artyom knew what was behind that. He had counted them already. 46 floors on foot. Mount Calvary was always climbed on foot.
Always on foot.
The knapsack weighed an entire ton now, and that ton pressed Artyom down into the concrete, making it hard to walk, hindering his stride. But Artyom strode on anyway like a clockwork toy, and he spoke like a clockwork toy, too.
"So what if they didn't? Have any intercept missiles? All the same, there must have been. People must have. Somewhere. It's not possible that only here, only in Moscow, in the metro. The earth's still there. It hasn't split apart. The sky's clearing. It's just not possible. For the entire country. And America. And France. And China. And Thailand, or some other place like that. What did they ever do to anyone? There was no reason to."
Of course, in all his 26 years of life, Artyom had never been in either France or Thailand. He had hardly seen anything of the old world at all. He was born too late. And the geography of the new world was scantier. The Exhibition metro station. The Lubyanka metro station. The Arbat metro station. The Circle Line. But when he examined the mold-blighted photographs of Paris and New York in the rare tourist magazines, Artyom felt in his heart that these cities were still there, still standing somewhere, that they hadn't disappeared. Maybe they were waiting for him?
Why would only Moscow be left? It's not logical. "Jen, do you understand? It's not logical. And that means, it means we simply can't pick them up. They're call signs. We can't. Not yet. We just have to carry on. We can't give up. We mustn't."
The tower block was empty, but it still made sounds. It still had a life. The wind flew in through balconies, slammed doors, wheezed in the lift shaft. Muttered something in other people's kitchens and bedrooms, pretending to be the owners who had come back home. But Artyom didn't believe it any longer. He didn't even look round. And he didn't pay any visits. He knew what was behind those restlessly banging doors, plundered apartments. All that was left were snapshots scattered across the floor. The dead strangers had had themselves photographed as mementos for no one. And incredibly, cumbersome furniture that was impossible to take anywhere, not into the metro or the next world. In other buildings, the windows had been blown out by the shockwave, but here there were storm windows, and they had survived, though in 20 years they had all acquired a coating of dust, as if they had been blinded by cataracts. Earlier on in some apartment or other, he sometimes came across the former owner, nuzzling the trunk of his gas mask against some toy and weeping through it nasally, not able to hear anyone approaching from behind. But now it was a long time since he had come across anyone. One of them had been left lying here with a hole in his back beside that idiotic toy of his, and the others had glanced at him and realized that there wasn't any home up here on the surface, that there wasn't anything here at all. Concrete, bricks, slush, cracked asphalt, yellow bones, the decayed dust of everything. And the radiation, too, of course. It was like that in Moscow, and in all the rest of the world. There was no life anywhere, except in the metro. It was a fact. Everyone knew it. Everyone. Except Artyom. But what if somewhere in the boundless expanses of the earth there was another place fit for human habitation? For Artyom and for Anya. For everyone from the station. A place where they wouldn't have a cast iron ceiling over their heads, and where they could grow right up to the sky. Build themselves houses of their own, a life of their own, and from that place go on gradually to resettle the whole of the scorched earth.
I could find places for all our people. They could live in the open air.
46 floors. Artyom could have stopped on the 40th or even on the 30th. After all, no one had told him that he had to climb all the way to the very top. But somehow he had got it into his head that if he had any chance of success at all, that it was only up there, on the roof.
Of course, it's not as high as on the tower that time, but...
The lenses of Artyom's gas mask had misted it over. His heart was trying to pound its way out of his chest, and someone seemed to be probing at Artyom's rib, looking for a way to slip a crude metal shank in under it. The breath he drew in strenuously through the gas mask's filters was too meager. There wasn't enough life in it. And just like that time in the tower, when Artyom reached the 45th floor, he gave in and tore off the tight-fitting rubber skin. He took a gulp of sweet and bitter air. Completely different from the air in the metro. Fresh.
The height may be up there, about 300 meters, the height. So probably, from that height, I can pick it up.
He shrugged the knapsack off his shoulders and lugged it the rest of the way. Leaning his stiff back against the hatch, he forced it out and clambered onto the open surface. And only then did he fall. He lay on his back, looking at the clouds, which were only an arm's length away. He coaxed his heart and calmed his breathing. Then he got up. The view from here was... It was as if Artyom had died and gone flying up to heaven, but suddenly run into a glass ceiling and got stuck there, dangling underneath it, no way back and no way forward. It was obvious from that height that it was no longer possible to go back. When you've seen how tiny everything on Earth really is, how can you take it all seriously again? Towering up beside him were two identical skyscrapers, bright and colorful once upon a time, now gray. But Artyom had always climbed this one. It felt cozier that way. For a brief second, a gun-slit gap appeared in the clouds, and the sun fired a shot through it. He thought he saw a sudden glint from the next building, either from the roof or from the dusty window of one of the upper apartments, as if someone had caught the ray of sunlight in a little mirror. But before he could glance round, the sun barricaded itself away again, and the glint disappeared. There weren't any more. Hard as Artyom tried to turn his eyes away, his gaze kept slipping over toward the regenerated forest that flourished where the botanical gardens had been, and to the naked, black wasteland at the very heart of it. A spot as dead as if the Lord himself had dumped his leftover boiling sulphur onto it. But no, not the Lord. The botanical gardens. Artyom remembered them looking different. They were all that he remembered from the pre-war world that disappeared. A strange business. Look, your entire life consists of tiles, tunnel liners, dripping ceilings and rivulets running along the floor beside the tracks, of granite and marble, of stale air and electric light. Then suddenly there's a tiny little piece of something else in it. A cool morning in May. Innocent, delicate new greenery on elegant trees, park paths covered with drawings in coloured chalk, a tantalising queue for ice cream, and that ice cream itself in a wafer cup, not simply sweet but absolutely heavenly. And your mother's voice, weak and distorted by time, as if it's coming through a copper telephone cable, and the warmth of her hand, which you try not to let slip out of yours so that you won't get lost. And you cling on with all your might. Although, is it really possible to remember that kind of thing? Probably not. And all of this something else is so incongruous and impossible that you don't even understand any longer if it really did happen to you or you simply dreamed it. But how could you have dreamed it if you've never seen or experienced anything like it? Artyom could see it all in front of him. The chalk drawings on the paths, the sun shining through the lacy foliage and golden needles, the ice cream in his hand, the funny orange ducks scattered across the brown mirror of the shady pond and the rickety little bridges over it. He was so afraid of falling into that water and even more afraid of dropping his little wafer cup into it. But her face, his mother's face, Artyom couldn't remember that. He had tried to summon it. When he went to bed, he had tried asking himself to see it at least in his dreams, even if he forgot it again by morning. But nothing worked. Had there really not been even a tiny little corner of his head where his mother could have hidden and waited out the death and darkness? Apparently not. But how can a person exist and then completely disappear? And that day, and that world, where could they have vanished to? Look, they're here, right beside you. Just close your eyes. Of course you can go back to them. They must have escaped and still be there somewhere in the world, calling to everyone who has gotten lost. We're here, but where are you? You just have to hear them. You just have to know how to listen. Artyom blinked and rubbed his eyelids, so that his eyes would see today again and not 20 years ago. He sat down and opened the knapsack. It contained a radio transmitter receiver, a cumbersome army model, green and badly scratched, and another monstrosity, a metal box with a handle that could be turned. A homemade generator. And right at the bottom, 40 meters of fine cable. The antenna for the radio. Artyom attached all the wires, walked round the roof, reeling out the cable, wiped the water off his face, and reluctantly pulled on the gas mask again. Squeezed on the headphones, he caressed buttons with his fingers and twirled the handle of the generator. A diode blinked. He felt a buzzing and vibrating in his palm, like a living thing. He flipped a switch. He closed his eyes because he was afraid they would prevent him from fishing out that bottle. The one with a message in it from a distant continent where someone else had survived. He swayed to and fro on the waves, and he turned the generator handle as if he were rowing an inflatable raft along with his hand. The headphones started hissing, whining through the crackling with a shrill meow. They coughed consumptively and fell silent for a moment, then hissed again as if Artyom were wandering through a tuberculosis isolation ward, looking for someone to talk to, but not a single patient was conscious. There were only nurses, putting their fingers to their lips and shushing strictly. No one here wanted to give Artyom an answer. No one intended to live. No one from St. Petersburg. No one from Yekaterinburg. London remained silent. Paris remained silent. Bangkok and New York remained silent. It hadn't mattered for a long time now who started that war. It just didn't matter how it had started. Who could it matter to? History? History was written by the victors. There was no one here to write it, and soon there wouldn't be anyone to read it either. The airways were filled with emptiness, boundless emptiness. Communication satellites hovered restlessly in their orbits. No one called them. The loneliness was driving them insane, and they plunged back down to Earth. Burning up in the air was better than this. Not a word from Peking, and Tokyo was a silent grave. But Artyom kept turning that cursed handle anyway, turning and rowing, rowing and turning. How quiet it was. Impossibly quiet. Unbearably quiet.
Moscow here. Moscow here, come in.
That was his voice, Artyom's. As usual, he couldn't wait. He didn't have the patience.
Moscow here, over. Come in.
He mustn't stop. He mustn't give up.
St. Petersburg, come in. Vladivostok, Moscow here, come in. Rostov, come in.
What's wrong with you, City of Peter? How could you have turned out to be so feeble, feebler than Moscow? What's taken your place up there, a lake of glass? Or has the mold eaten you up? Why don't you answer, eh? Where have you got to, Vladivostok, proud city at the other end of the world? You used to stand so far away from us. Did they really spill their plague on you too? Did they really not have any pity even on you? Kukwa, kukwa, kukwa.
Come in, Vladivostok. Moscow here.
The entire world is lying face down in the mud. It doesn't feel the drops of this interminable rain on its back. It doesn't sense that its mouth and nose are full of rusty water. But Moscow, there it is, standing there, still on its feet, as if alive.
What is all this? Have you all croaked then? All of you?
Maybe that was their souls who had slipped into the airwaves and were answering him like that. Or maybe that was the way the background radiation sounded. Death had to have a voice of its own. Probably just like that. A whisper. Come on now. No noise. Calm down, calm down.
Moscow here, come in.
Maybe they would hear him this time. Right now someone would cough in the headphones, break excitedly through the hissing, and shout somewhere far, far away.
We're here, Moscow! I hear you! Come in, Moscow! Don't go off air! I hear you! My God! Moscow! Moscow has made contact! How many of you have survived there? We have a colony here, 25,000 people! The land's clean, zero radiation, the water's unpolluted, food, of course, medicines, yes, we have them! We're sending a rescue mission for you, just hold on! Do you hear, Moscow? That's the most important thing! Hold on!
Nothing. This wasn't an attempt at radio contact. It was a spiritualist seance, and Artyom simply couldn't get the hang of that. The spirits he was summoning didn't want to come to him. They felt just fine in the next world. They looked down through the sparse gaps between the clouds at Artyom's little hunched-up figure, and just chuckled.
Down there, to you? Oh no, not on your life. Quack, quack.
He stopped turning the damned handle and tore off the headphones. He got up, coiled the antenna into a neat bundle, slowly forcing himself to be neat, violating his own will, because he wanted to tear it into pieces and fling it into the abyss from 46 floors up. He packed everything into the knapsack and set the demon of temptation on his shoulders. He carried it down into the metro. Until tomorrow.
Have you carried out the decontamination routine?
The blue handset asked in a nasal voice.
Yes.
Answer more clearly.
Yes, I have.
He has? Uh-huh.
The handset hissed incredulously, and Artyom flung it against the wall in loathing. The lock scraped inside the door, and the bolts withdrew. Then the door gave a long, drawn-out screech and opened, and the Metro breathed out its stale, heavy air on Artyom. Sukhoi met him on the threshold. Either he had sensed when Artyom would come back, or he hadn't gone away at all. Probably he had sensed the moment.
How are you?
He asked in a weary, good-natured voice. Artyom shrugged. Sukhoi ran his glance over him, gently like a children's doctor.
There was someone here looking for you. He came from another station.
Artyom drew himself up erect.
Was he from Miller?
His voice jangled as if a shell case had been dropped on the floor. Hope, or cowardice, or what?
No, some old man.
What old man? The final drops of Artyom's strength gathered together in case his stepfather answered yes, instantly leaked away. And now all he wanted was to lie down.
Homer. He called himself Homer. Do you know anyone called that?
No. I'm going to sleep, Uncle Sasha.
She didn't stir a muscle. Was she asleep or not? Artyom wondered. He simply wondered, automatically, because it was no longer any concern of his whether she was sleeping or pretending. He dumped his clothes in a bundle by the entrance, rubbed his shoulders to warm them up a bit, huddled up sideways against Anya like an orphan, and pulled the blanket over himself. If there had been another blanket, he wouldn't have bothered to mess with her. The station clock said 7 in the evening, didn't it? But at 10, Anya had to get up and go to work with the mushrooms. Artyom had been excused from mushroom duty as a hero, or as an invalid. He decided himself what his duties would be and when to perform them. He woke up when she came back from her shift and went up onto the surface. He blanked out while she was still pretending to be asleep. That was how they lived. In antiphase. In a single bed. In different dimensions. Carefully, so as not to wake her, Artyom started winding the quilted blanket round himself. Anya felt it, and without saying a word, furiously tugged the blanket in the opposite direction. After a minute of this idiotic struggle, Artyom gave in, and was left lying naked on the edge of the bed.
Great, he said.
She didn't say anything. Why is it that a light bulb glows brightly at first, and then burns out? Then he lay with his face buried in the pillow. There were two of those, thank God, warming it with his breath, and he fell asleep like that. And in a mean, sneaky dream he saw a different Anya, laughing, jaunty, cheerfully provoking him, so perfectly young. Although how much time had gone by? 2 years? 2 days? God only knew when things could have been like that. Back then it seemed like they had a whole eternity ahead of them. It had seemed that way to both of them. So everything must have been like that an eternity ago. It was cold in his dream. But it was Anya who was making him feel the cold. He thought she was chasing him, naked, around the station, but out of mischief, not hate. And when Artyom woke up, in his sleepy inertia, he carried on believing for a whole minute that eternity hadn't ended yet, that he and Anya were only halfway through it. He wanted to call her, forgive her, turn it all into a joke. Then he remembered. Chapter 2 The Metro.
Are you at least trying to listen to me?
He asked Anya. But she was no longer in the tent. His clothes were lying exactly where he had left them, by the entrance. Anya hadn't tidied them up or flung them about. She just stepped over them, as if she was afraid of touching them, of getting contaminated. Maybe she really was afraid. She had probably always needed the blanket more. He'd get warm somehow. It was a good thing she had gone. Thanks, Anya. Thanks for not bothering to talk to me. For not answering me. Thanks a whole bunch. Fuck it, he said out loud.
May I come in?
Someone replied through the tarpaulin right above his ear.
Artyom, are you awake?
Artyom crept over to his trousers. Waiting outside, seated on a folding hiking stool, was an old man with a face that was too soft for his age. He was sitting comfortably, in an easy, well-balanced pose, and it was clear that he had settled in here a long time ago, and had no intention at all of leaving. The old man was a stranger, not from this station. He puckered up his face and breathed in heedlessly through his nose. You could tell outsiders. Artyom folded his fingers into a visor and used it to shield his eyes against the crimson light with which Exhibition Station was flooded while he peered at his visitor.
What do you want, old man? Are you Artyom?
I might be, said Artyom, drawing air in through his nose.
That depends. I'm Homer,
the old man announced without getting up.
That's what they call me.
Is that so?
I write books. A book.
That's interesting, Artyom said in the voice of a man who isn't interested.
An historical book, kind of. Only about our times.
Historical? Artyom repeated cautiously, glancing round.
What's that for? They say history's finished, it's over. What about us? Someone has to take everything that's happening to us here and tell the future generations about it.
If he's not from Miller, Artyom thought, then who is he? Who from? What for?
The future generations. A sacred duty. On the one hand, we have to tell them about the most important thing. What our life here is like. Record all the milestones and vicissitudes, so to speak. But then on the other hand, how do we do it? Dry facts get forgotten. For people to remember things, we need a living story. We need a hero. I've been searching for material like that. I tried all sorts of things. I thought I'd found him. But when I got started, it didn't work out. It didn't come together. And then I heard about Exhibition Station and...
The old man obviously didn't find it easy to explain himself. But Artyom wasn't going to help him anyway. He still couldn't understand what was coming next. There was nothing malicious about the old man. He was simply incongruous. But something was accumulating in the air, taking shape between him and Artyom, something that was bound to explode at any moment, searing Artyom with heat and hacking at him with shrapnel.
They told me about Exhibition, about the Dark Ones and about you, and I realized you were the one I had to find, in order to...
Artyom nodded. He'd finally understood.
A good story.
And without even saying goodbye, he strode off, thrusting his permanently freezing hands into his pockets. The little old man was left stuck on his comfortable little stool, still explaining something to Artyom's back as it moved away. But Artyom had decided to go deaf. He blinked, and his eyes adjusted. He didn't need to squint anymore. It had taken them longer to adjust to the light up on the surface. A year. And that was fast. Most of the inhabitants of the metro would have been blinded, probably forever, by sunlight, even the kind that was smothered by clouds. They had lived in the dark all their lives, after all. But Artyom had forced himself to see up there, to see the world in which he had been born. Because if you can't tolerate the sun, then how can you go back up onto the surface when the time comes? Everyone who was born in the metro had grown without the sun, like mushrooms. It was okay. It turned out that people didn't need the sun, just vitamin D. You could guzzle sunlight in the form of a pill, and you could live by touch. There wasn't any general system of lighting in the metro. There wasn't any common source of electricity. They didn't possess anything in common. It was everyone for themselves. At some stations, they had learned to generate enough electricity to light things up almost as bright as they used to be. At others, they had only enough for a single light bulb burning at the center of the platform. And some were crammed full of the same blackness as in the tunnels. If someone brought light there with them in their pocket, they could pick little bits out of the void, the floor, the ceiling, a marble column. And the inhabitants of the station would come creeping toward the beam of the torch to be able to see for at least a moment. But it was better not to show yourself to them. They had learned to live perfectly well without eyes. But their mouths hadn't grown over. At exhibition, life was founded on a firm basis, and the people there were spoiled. Some individuals even had small light-emitting diodes, filched from up on the surface, glowing in their tents, and for public areas there was still the old emergency lighting, lamps with red glass shades, lighting that would have been convenient for developing photographic negatives, for instance, in the way that the image of Artyom's soul had been slowly developed in this red light, showing through the developing fluid, making it clear that the photograph had been taken back there, up on the surface, on a bright day in May, and then exposed, fogging it, on a different day, an overcast one in October.
"A fine story, eh, Jean? Remember the dark ones?"
Artyom whispered. But it was always someone else who answered him. It was always the wrong people who answered him.
"Hi there, Artyom."
"Oh, Artyom."
Everyone greeted him. Some smiled, some frowned, but they all greeted him because all of them, not just Zhenker and Artyom, remembered the Dark Ones. They all remembered that story, although no one knew it. Exhibition Station, the end of the line, his native place, 200 meters long with 200 people in that space, which was just right. Any more and you wouldn't be able to breathe freely. Any less and you wouldn't be able to get warm. The station had been built 100 years ago, in the times of the former empire, out of its usual imperial materials, marble and granite. It had been conceived as a triumphal structure, like a palace. But of course it was buried in the ground, so it had turned out like a cross between a museum and a sepulchre. The ancestral atmosphere here was absolutely ineradicable, as it was in all the other stations, even the newer ones. As if the inhabitants of the metro were grown up, but they were still sitting on the bronze knees of ancient old men and couldn't climb down. They were held tight. The smoke-blackened columns spread wide at their tops, and in the archways between them, ancient, threadbare army tents had been pitched with a family, sometimes two in each one. Those families could be simply shuffled about, and probably no one would notice. When you live together at the same station for 20 years, when all there is between your secrets and your neighbors, between all the groans and all the screams, is a single layer of tarpaulin, that's the way things are. In some places, maybe people would already have eaten each other, out of envy, you know, and jealousy, because God loved someone else's children more than yours, and it was impossible to share your husband or wife with others, and space for accommodation was quite valuable enough to strangle someone for it. But not here. Not at exhibition. Here things had turned out simple and friendly somehow. Like in a village or a commune. There weren't any children that weren't yours. If your neighbors had a healthy child, it was general celebration. If you had a sickly one, they would help you with the burden, each in whatever way they could. If you had nowhere to settle in, other people would move over. If you had a scrap with a friend, the cramped conditions would soon reconcile you. If your wife left you, you'd forgive her sooner or later. She hadn't really left at all. She was still here, in this marble hall with millions of tons of earth piled up on top of it. It was just that she was sleeping behind a different piece of tarpaulin. And you would meet her every day, and not just once, but 100 times. You would have to come to an understanding. There was no way you could imagine that she had never existed. The important thing was that everyone was alive. And beyond that, like in a commune. Or in a cave. There was a way out of here. The southern tunnel, which ran to Alexeyevskaya and beyond into the greater metro. But maybe that was the point, that exhibition was at the end of the line. And the people who lived here were those who couldn't go anywhere else any longer, who needed a home. Artyom stopped by one tent and froze. He stood there, shining his torch in through the threadbare tarpaulin, until a middle-aged woman with a puffy face came out.
Hello, Artyom.
Hello, Yekaterina Sergeyevna.
Zhenya's not here, Artyom.
He nodded to her. He wanted to stroke her hair, take hold of her hand, as if to say, yes, I know everything, really, Yekaterina Sergeyevna. Or are you saying that to yourself?
Go on, Artyom. Go on. Don't stand here. Go over there and have some tea. Right you are.
Both ends of the station had been cut short at the escalators. They had walled themselves in and sealed up the exit so that poisoned air wouldn't flow in from the surface, and they could keep out visitors of various kinds. The end with the new exit was completely sealed off. At the other end with the old exit, they had left an airlock for getting up into the city. At the end with the blank wall there was a kitchen and a club. Stoves for cooking on, housewives in aprons fussing about, concocting lunch for their children and husbands. Water flowed through the pipes of charcoal filters and gurgled as it ran out, almost transparent into the tanks. Every now and then a kettle would start whistling, and a courier from the farms would run in to get some hot water, wiping his hands on his trousers and looking for his wife, so he could grab her in some place soft and remind her about love. And at the same time, wolf down a piece of something still only half-cooked. The stoves and the kettles, the dishes and the chairs and tables weren't personal property. They were communal, but people still treated them with care and didn't damage them. Everything apart from the food had been brought down from the surface. You couldn't cobble together anything decent in the metro. If it was good that when the dead still intended to live, they had laid in all sorts of goods and equipment for future use— light bulbs, diesel generators, wire, guns, bullets, plates and dishes, furniture. And they had masses of clothes made. Now these could be worn like hand-me-downs from older brothers and sisters. There would be enough for a long time. In the entire metro there were no more than 50,000 people, and there used to be 15 million in Moscow. That meant that everyone had 300 relatives like that, crowding round silently, holding out their cast-offs without saying a word. Take mine, take them, they're almost new. I've grown out of them already. You just had to check their things with a Geiger counter to see if it clicked too loudly and say thank you. Then you could wear them. Artyom reached the queue for tea and tacked himself on at the end.
Artyom, where are you going? Like some kind of stranger? He wants to stand in the queue now. Sit down, take the load off your feet. Shall I pour you a good hot one?
The person in charge here was Fur Coat Dashka, a woman who was clearly about 50 but had absolutely no desire to think about the fact. She had come to Moscow from some dump near Yaroslavl 3 days before the Big Bang to buy a fur coat. She had bought one. And since then she had never taken it off, by day or by night, not even to go to the toilet. Artyom had never laughed at her. What if he still had a piece of his own former life like that? A piece of May, or ice cream, or the shade from the poplars, or his mother's smile?
Yes, thanks, Auntie Dasha.
Enough of that auntie business,
she reproached him flirtatiously.
Well, how are things up on top? What's the weather like?
It's raining a bit.
Ah, are we going to get flooded again then? Hear that, Eagle? Rain, he says.
Allah is punishing us for our sins. Look out, or that pork of yours is going to burn.
Why go bringing your Allah into things like that? She always wants Allah involved straight away. Ah, right, it is sticking a bit. How's your Mehmet? Back from Hansa yet?
He's been gone 3 days, three.
Don't get so worried about it. I swear to you on my heart, Dasha, he's found himself someone there, one of your kind, in sin.
Your kind, my kind?
What are you going on about? We're all here, Agulishka. All in the same boat together.
He's found himself some easy lay, I swear by Allah.
Ah, you should give him it more often yourself. Men are like kittens, aren't they? They keep on nuzzling until they find it.
What's all this nonsense? He's away on commercial business,
put in a little man almost as small as a child, with a face that was childish but ravaged by alcohol. Something had stopped him from growing properly.
All right, Kolya, don't you go covering up for your sidekicks, and you, Artyom, pay no attention to us women. There now, blow on it. It's hot.
Thanks. A man walked up, covered with the lines of old white scars and completely bald, but not fearsome at all because of his bushy eyebrows and smooth speech.
Greetings to all here present, and in particular the ladies. Who's here for tea? I'm after you then, Kolyun. Have you already heard about Hansa?
What about Hansa?
The border's shut. As the great classic put it, on came the red light, no crossing now, so sit tight. 5 of our people are stuck in there.
There now, that's it, Igulka. Stir your mushrooms there, your mushrooms. And my man's in there. What about me, by Allah? What do you mean? It's closed, eh, Konstantin?
They just closed it, and that's it. None of our lousy business. An order's an order.
They're fighting again, I suppose. Fighting with the red line again, probably, eh? I wish the whole lot of them would croak. But who knows? Eh, Konstantin? Who should I go to? My Mehmet?
It's a preventative measure. I've just come from there. Some kind of quarantine on trade. They'll open it soon.
Hello.
Oh, hello there, dear sir. Visiting here? Who are you? Where from?
I'm from Sebastopol. May I take a seat here?
Artyom stopped breathing the scalding steam and looked up from the chipped white mug with a narrow gold rim. The old man had staggered all the way here looking for him and was now studying him stealthily out of the corner of his eye. So all right. Artyom couldn't run away from him.
So how did you sneak through to us, Granddad, if they've closed everything?
Asked Artyom, challenging the old man with a direct stare.
I was the last to slip through,
the old man said without flinching or batting an eyelid.
They closed the border just behind me.
We could live our lives well enough without them, without that Hansa. But let them try living without our tea, without our mushrooms, the spongers. We'll get by with the help of God.
They'll open it, you say, but what if they don't? What about my Mehmet? You go and talk to Sukhoi, Igulka. He'll have your Mehmet out of there in no time. He'll not abandon him. How about some tea? Have you tried ours before?
I won't say no,
the self-styled Homer replied, waggling his beard. He sat there facing Artyom, sipping their local mushroom infusion, which was proudly but groundlessly called tea. All the genuine tea had been drunk 10 years ago, of course. And waiting. Artyom waited too.
Who's waiting for hot water?
Artyom's heart leapt into his throat. Anya had walked up. She stood there with her back to him as if she hadn't even noticed him.
Working today, Anyut?
Fur coat asked, immediately trying to draw her into conversation and wiping her hands on her balding fur pockets.
The mushrooms?
Yes,
said Anya, still with her back to everyone, determined not to turn round. So she had noticed everything.
Hard on the waist, eh? All that bending. It's killing me, Auntie Dasha.
Mushrooms aren't pigs,
slant-eyed, thick-set Aigul declared with a disapproving sniff.
Has to bend, does she? You try puddling about in shit. You puddle about in it. Everyone chooses work to suit their own taste.
Anya retorted in an even voice. Her voice was even, but Artyom knew it was precisely when she spoke in that calm way that she could lash out. She could do anything at all. She'd been well taught. With a father like that.
Stop quarreling, girls,
purred Konstantin with the slash scars.
All professions are necessary. All professions are important, as the great classic wrote.
Without mushrooms, what would we feed the pigs?
The champignon mushrooms grew in one of the two caved-in northern tunnels that used to lead to the botanical garden station. 300 meters of mushroom plantations, and then a pig farm after that. The pigs had been stuck as far away as possible to keep the stink down, as if 300 meters was enough to save anyone. What saved them was something different, the way human senses worked. New arrivals smelled the vile odor of pigs for a day or two, and then they got used to it. Anya took a while to get used to it. The locals had stopped smelling anything a long time ago. They had nothing to compare it with. But Artyom did.
"It's good if you happen to be fond of mushrooms," he said in a clear, distinct voice, looking directly at the back of Anya's head. "It's easier to reach an understanding with mushrooms than with people.
And some people shouldn't be so scornful of mushrooms," she said. "There are people you can't tell apart from mushrooms at first glance. They even have the same diseases."
Anya finally swung round towards him.
"Take today, for instance. Half of my mushrooms had some kind of mold on them. Rot has set in. Do you understand that? Where did it come from?"
"What kind of mold's that?"
Eichel asked in alarm.
"Moles all we need now. Allah preserve us."
"Tea for anyone?"
Fur Coat intervened.
"I collected a crate that size of mold,"
Anya said, looking Artyom straight in the eye.
"But they used to be perfectly normal mushrooms. Healthy."
"Well, what a disaster,"
Artyom said with a shake of his head. "The mushrooms have gone off."
What are we going to eat?"
Fur Coat asked reasonably.
"Of course, what kind of disaster is that?"
Anya answered him in a quiet, steely voice.
"Now, when no one takes the great hero and savior of the entire metro seriously any longer, that's a real disaster."
"Come on, Igulka, let's take a breath of air,"
said Fur Coat, jerking up one painted eyebrow.
"It's getting a bit hot round here."
"Ahem," said Homer, getting to his feet after the others.
"No," said Artyom, gesturing to stop him. "Right. You wanted to hear about the hero. About Artyom, who saved the entire metro. Then listen. Listen to the truth. You think people are interested in that?"
"Because people have their own business to deal with. Real business. Work. To feed their families and raise their children. And when certain people mope about and can't find anything to occupy themselves and invent all sorts of bullshit for themselves, now that is a disaster."
Anya had taken up position and opened fire on him in bursts, short, short, long.
"No. The disaster is when a human being doesn't want to live like a human being but wants to live like a pig or like a mushroom,"
Artyom replied,
"when he's only concerned about one thing." "The disaster is when a mushroom thinks he's a human being," said Anya, no longer trying to conceal her hatred. "And no one tells him the truth in order not to upset him."
"Is it true? There really is mold on the mushrooms?"
asked Fur Coat Dasher, who had almost decamped already.
"Yes, it's true."
"Oh, hell! Allah is punishing us,"
Aigul proclaimed loudly from a distance.
"For our sins, for eating pork, that's why."
"Go on now. Go. The mushrooms are calling,"
said Artyom, shoving Anya, who had frozen on the spot, coughing and sneezing.
"Where are you, Mummy? They're saying."
"You useless bastard.
Go. Mushrooms would be more use in bed. Go on, go.
You go. You go, go on. Clear off to where you belong, up there. Run that aerial right round the city. Tear your throat out with your wailing. There's no one there, got that? No one. They all croaked, you amateur radio enthusiast, you useless jerk.
Afterwards, you'll..."
"There isn't going to be any afterwards, Artyom. It won't happen."
Her eyes were dry. Her father had taught her not to cry. She had a father, her own, genuine father. She swung round and walked away. Artyom was left with his mug of mushroom infusion, a white mug with a chipped gold rim. Homer sat beside him discreetly, without speaking. People started coming back to the kitchen. They talked about the mushrooms being infected with some kind of white rot and sighed, hoping there wouldn't be another war. Tattled about who someone's husband had grabbed by which part on the pig farm. A little pink piglet darted past with a pale, consumptive little girl chasing it. A cat walked round the table with its tail as erect as a chimney, rubbed up against Artyom's knee and looked into his mouth. The steam above the mug had cooled, and the tea had grown a skin of scum, and everything inside Artyom started growing over with scum. He put the mug down and looked straight ahead. That old man was there.
So that's the story, Granddad.
I'm sorry.
A waste of time coming, eh? That won't delight our descendants, those of us who have any.
It wasn't a waste.
Artyom drew in a sharp breath through his teeth. What a stubborn old fart. He hoisted his ass up off the bench and dragged it out of the kitchen. Breakfast was over. Now he had to fulfill his work obligations. Homer tagged along behind.
What was that you... I'm sorry, what was that girl talking about? An aerial amateur radio enthusiast. It's none of my business, of course, but you go up on the surface, right? And listen to the radio.
I go up and I listen.
Are you hoping to find other survivors?
I'm hoping to find other survivors.
And how's it going?
Artyom didn't hear any mockery in his voice. The man was simply curious, as if Artyom was doing something absolutely normal. Say, ferrying cured hams to Hansa. It isn't. Homer nodded to him and frowned. He was about to say something, but he changed his mind. Would he commiserate with Artyom, try to talk sense into him? Pretend to be interested. Artyom couldn't give a damn. They reached the enclosure with the bicycles. Artyom didn't like mushrooms because Anya liked them. He didn't like pigs because of the stink. He was the only one here who could smell it, and he had come to an arrangement. As a hero, he'd been excused from those things. But they didn't feed spongers at exhibition. Once you'd served your watch at the checkpoint in the tunnel, you had to do a shift in the station as well. And Artyom had chosen the bicycles. There were 14 of them in a row, handlebars pointing towards the wall, on which there were posters. The first poster showed the Kremlin and the Moscow River, the second showed someone's faded charms in a pink swimsuit, the third the skyscrapers of New York, and the fourth a snow-bound monastery in the Orthodox Christian holy days in the calendar grid. Choose your mood and spin the pedals. The bicycles stood on struts, and straps ran from their back wheels to electric generators. Attached to each bike was a little lamp that faintly illuminated your poster dream for the day. The rest of the electricity went into batteries to power the station. The bicycles stood in a caved-in southern tunnel, and outsiders weren't allowed anywhere near them. A strategic facility. The old man apparently hadn't glanced in here yet.
He's with me,
Artyom said for some reason, waving to the sentry, and Homer was allowed through. Artyom mounted a rusty frame and took hold of the rubber handles. Berlin, scrounged from some Hansa book dealers, loomed up indistinctly in front of him. The Brandenburg Gate, the TV tower, and a black sculpture of a woman with her hands raised to her head. Artyom realized that that gate was very similar to the entrance to the Exhibition of Economic Achievements, and the TV tower, although it had a spherical node halfway up, reminded him of the Ostankino Tower. And that statue of the woman, either screaming or squeezing her ears shut. He might as well never have gone anywhere.
"Fancy a spin, Granddad?"
Artyom asked, turning towards Homer.
"It's good for the heart. You'll hold out longer. Here."
But the old man didn't answer. He was staring glassy-eyed at the flat tires spinning, trying to catch a breath of air. His face was skewed as if he was paralyzed. One half was smiling and the other was lifeless, dead.
"Are you all right there, Granddad?" Artyom asked.
"Yes, I just remembered something. Someone..."
Homer wheezed. Then he cleared his throat and recovered.
"Ah."
Everyone had someone to remember. 300 shadows each, just waiting for you to think about them. They set out their snares, installed their tripwires, reeled out their long lines with hooks, and suspended their webs, and waited. A bicycle with no front wheel will remind someone how he taught his children to ride a bike in the courtyard of their apartment block. A kettle will whistle exactly the way it used to do in the kitchen of someone else's parents at the weekend, when guests came to have lunch and shared the news about their lives. Blink, and in that instant between now and now, your eyes suddenly see yesterday. Your eyes see their faces. True, as the years go by, they see them less and less clearly. Well, fine.
How did you find out about me?
You're famous,
Homer said with a smile.
Everyone knows about you.
Artyom made a wry face.
Famous.
He spat the word back out.
You saved the metro. All the people. If you hadn't hit those creatures with those missiles, to be honest, I don't understand. Why don't you want to talk about it?
There in front of him were the gates to the Exhibition of Economic Achievements and a black woman with her arms raised. He ought to move to another bike, but all the others were already taken. And this was the one that had been left for Artyom. He felt like spinning the pedals backwards away from that tower, but that way no electricity would be generated.
I heard about you from Miller.
What?
Miller. Do you know him? The commander of the Order? You are aware of the existence of the Order, of course. The Spartans, they called him. As I understand it, you were a member yourself. Before...
Did Miller send you to me?
No. Miller just told me about you. He said you were the one who informed them about the Dark Ones. That you walked right through the metro all the way. And then afterwards, I started digging things up for myself. What I could. But even so, there's a lot that remains unclear. I realized that I couldn't make sense of it all without you, and I decided...
Did he say anything else?
Huh? Who?
Did Miller say anything else about me?
Yes.
Artyom stopped turning the pedals. He swung his leg over the bicycle frame and jumped down onto the floor. He crossed his arms. Well?
He said you'd gotten married. That you'd started living a normal human life.
That's what he said?
Yes, it is.
A normal human life? Artyom smiled.
Unless I've got something confused.
And did he tell you it was his daughter that I married? Homer shook his head. Is that all? The old man chewed on his lips. He sighed and confessed.
He said that you'd gone crazy.
Well, of course I've gone crazy.
I'm only passing on what I heard.
Nothing else?